Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. November Examination Series 2015. English as a Second Language. Extended Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the exam. Questions 1 to 4. You will hear 4 short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than 3 words for each question. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. Which restaurant did the woman eat at last night? B. What type of food does it serve?
Did you have a good time with your sister last night?
Great, thanks. We tried to get into the new restaurant that you told me about. You know, Ocean Club. It looked amazing. But the waiter said we'd have to wait at least half an hour for a table. So we went to Banana Leaf instead. It was just around the corner, and the food was delicious.
Is that the place that does Chinese food?
Actually, it's Indian. I thought you'd been there before.
No, I haven't.
Well, you should go there sometime.
Did you have a good time with your sister last night?
Great, thanks. We tried to get into the new restaurant that you told me about. You know, Ocean Club. It looked amazing. But the waiter said we'd have to wait at least half an hour for a table. So we went to Banana Leaf instead. It was just around the corner, and the food was delicious.
Is that the place that does Chinese food?
Actually, it's Indian. I thought you'd been there before.
No, I haven't.
Well, you should go there sometime.
Question 2. A. What present has the man bought for his mother? B. Where did he buy it?
Hello, George. How was your trip?
Really good, thanks, Mum. The meetings went well, and I had a day to do some sightseeing and shopping before I flew back. Ah, this is for you.
Oh, that's lovely. I'll put it on the dining table, I think. Do you know, I had a basket just like this one when you were little.
I remember. Actually, I nearly bought you a rug, but it was too big to carry back on the plane.
Well, this is perfect. Did you get it from a craft shop?
It came from the market, which is only there once a week. I was lucky that it happened to be on my day off.
Hello, George. How was your trip?
Really good, thanks, Mum. The meetings went well, and I had a day to do some sightseeing and shopping before I flew back. Ah, this is for you.
Oh, that's lovely. I'll put it on the dining table, I think. Do you know, I had a basket just like this one when you were little.
I remember. Actually, I nearly bought you a rug, but it was too big to carry back on the plane.
Well, this is perfect. Did you get it from a craft shop?
It came from the market, which is only there once a week. I was lucky that it happened to be on my day off.
Question 3. A. What will the next radio programme be about? B. Who will the special guest be in this programme?
You're listening to Star Radio. Coming up in a moment is My Time, the ever-popular talk show. Last week we asked you to email us about the topic of growing up, and plenty of you have done just that, so we'll have lots to talk about today. And thanks to everyone who sent in pictures of the children's games that we heard all about in the last programme. As usual, we've invited someone interesting to join us on the show. We'll be hearing from a famous chef in a few moments. I won't spoil it by saying who just yet, but I'll give you advance warning that a well-known politician will be with us next week. You're listening to Star Radio. Coming up in a moment is My Time, the ever-popular talk show. Last week we asked you to email us about the topic of growing up, and plenty of you have done just that, so we'll have lots to talk about today. And thanks to everyone who sent in pictures of the children's games that we heard all about in the last programme. As usual, we've invited someone interesting to join us on the show. We'll be hearing from a famous chef in a few moments. I won't spoil it by saying who just yet, but I'll give you advance warning that a well-known politician will be with us next week.
Question 4. A. Which school is the man's daughter going to next year? B. What does his daughter like most about the school?
Has your daughter sorted out where she's going to study next year yet?
Oh, we heard last week. Her first choice was Forest Academy, though it seems everyone wanted to go there. She's got a place at City College, and she's happy about that.
I've heard the teaching is very good there, and the art department is supposed to be one of the best. That's what she wants to study, isn't it?
That's right. But actually, she seems more excited about the sports centre. It's much bigger than the one we all go to at the moment.
Has your daughter sorted out where she's going to study next year yet?
Oh, we heard last week. Her first choice was Forest Academy, though it seems everyone wanted to go there. She's got a place at City College, and she's happy about that.
I've heard the teaching is very good there, and the art department is supposed to be one of the best. That's what she wants to study, isn't it?
That's right. But actually, she seems more excited about the sports centre. It's much bigger than the one we all go to at the moment.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear question 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 5. You will hear a student called Anna talking about some work experience she did last year at a television studio. Listen to the talk and complete the details below. Write 1 or 2 words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Hello, my name's Anna, and I've been asked to come here today to tell you about some work experience I did last year. It was after my first year at college, and I wanted to spend the summer doing something useful that might help me get a better job when I finish my course. As I'd like to work in television, I applied for a position at a local television studio. I saw the advertisement online. Apparently, about 650 people responded to it, which shows how popular these jobs are, even though they aren't paid. Of those, 76 people were sent an application form to fill in, then 21 got an interview, and eventually 4 people, myself included, were taken on. So, what did the application process involve? Obviously, I had to send in my CV, which wasn't too difficult. My tutor helped me with that. They also asked for a report. I had to write about an event I'd been to recently. That was quite a challenge, as I had no idea what sort of thing they were looking for. My work experience at the studio was 4 weeks long. I was asked to choose where I wanted to spend the first 2 weeks. I was tempted to join the news team, but in the end, I went for the music team. It was a good choice. I had a fantastic time with them. Lots of people think that all you do when you're on work experience is make everyone cups of coffee, but this was far from it. For example, I worked with another student looking into jazz songs so that we could prepare questions for a quiz show. We spent ages on the internet and went to the university library as well. Another thing I helped with was preparing for an interview, which one of the reporters was going to do with a film director. The main topic was sound effects, so I had to find out all about how they are made. That was really interesting. Then, in the third week, I joined the sports team. We had a meeting one day, which was to decide what to call a new program that they were planning. We all had to make some suggestions. I liked Beat It, which was the first idea. I came up with High Speed, though in the end what they chose was The Score. In my last week, I did several different things, which gave me a really good idea of how the whole studio operated. My favourite day was with the group who produced the scripts for a comedy show. On another day, I watched part of a food programme being filmed. That was really interesting too. Overall, doing this work experience was really useful, and I hope you can do something similar if you get a chance. Whatever you choose to do, make sure you have fun. And of course, work hard while you're there. But most of all, be yourself. In this way, you'll find out what your strengths and interests are, and it'll help you find your perfect job in the future. Now, has anyone got any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Hello, my name's Anna, and I've been asked to come here today to tell you about some work experience I did last year. It was after my first year at college, and I wanted to spend the summer doing something useful that might help me get a better job when I finish my course. As I'd like to work in television, I applied for a position at a local television studio. I saw the advertisement online. Apparently, about 650 people responded to it, which shows how popular these jobs are, even though they aren't paid. Of those, 76 people were sent an application form to fill in, then 21 got an interview, and eventually 4 people, myself included, were taken on. So, what did the application process involve? Obviously, I had to send in my CV, which wasn't too difficult. My tutor helped me with that. They also asked for a report. I had to write about an event I'd been to recently. That was quite a challenge, as I had no idea what sort of thing they were looking for. My work experience at the studio was 4 weeks long. I was asked to choose where I wanted to spend the first 2 weeks. I was tempted to join the news team, but in the end, I went for the music team. It was a good choice. I had a fantastic time with them. Lots of people think that all you do when you're on work experience is make everyone cups of coffee, but this was far from it. For example, I worked with another student looking into jazz songs so that we could prepare questions for a quiz show. We spent ages on the internet and went to the university library as well. Another thing I helped with was preparing for an interview, which one of the reporters was going to do with a film director. The main topic was sound effects, so I had to find out all about how they are made. That was really interesting. Then, in the third week, I joined the sports team. We had a meeting one day, which was to decide what to call a new program that they were planning. We all had to make some suggestions. I liked Beat It, which was the first idea. I came up with High Speed, though in the end what they chose was The Score. In my last week, I did several different things, which gave me a really good idea of how the whole studio operated. My favourite day was with the group who produced the scripts for a comedy show. On another day, I watched part of a food programme being filmed. That was really interesting too. Overall, doing this work experience was really useful, and I hope you can do something similar if you get a chance. Whatever you choose to do, make sure you have fun. And of course, work hard while you're there. But most of all, be yourself. In this way, you'll find out what your strengths and interests are, and it'll help you find your perfect job in the future. Now, has anyone got any questions?
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear question 6. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 6. You will hear 6 people talking about reading books. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list A to G which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. Speaker 1.
I've always been a keen reader. I read all kinds of books. I think it's better not to get into the habit of reading the same sort of thing all the time. That does mean that sometimes I end up with a book which I'm not all that keen on, and I have to force myself to get to the last page. I won't give up, though, no matter how dreadful the story is. You never know what's going to happen at the end.
Speaker 2.
I've got so many books at home. Whenever a friend comes round, they end up looking at my bookshelves and asking me what I think they'd enjoy. It's nice to be able to lend them a book, as long as they remember to return it. Even though I'm very attached to my own little library, I've started reading on screen recently, and I'm quite surprised that I find it easier and more convenient than having to hold a book open and keep turning pages over. I didn't expect that.
Speaker 3.
I have such a busy lifestyle that I never usually have much time for reading. But if I can, I try to get through a few pages last thing each day, just before I switch the lights off. It's a great way to relax. But I've just been on holiday, and all I did was sit in the sunshine and read. It was wonderful. I was so excited that I was able to spend time reading the little pile of books that had been sitting on my shelf for such a long time.
Speaker 4.
My friends and I have started a kind of book club. We all read the same book, then meet up and talk about it. We actually have quite a good laugh. We take it in turns to decide what to read next, but it has to be something that none of us have read before. Some books have certainly been better than others. When it's my turn to decide, I always look on the internet to see what other people have got to say before I make up my mind.
Speaker 5.
I never enjoyed studying literature at school. It seemed to take the pleasure out of reading for me. So for years, I used to pick up a book, read a few chapters, then start losing enthusiasm for it before getting to the end. Now, what I find works for me is to have a few books lying around. I'll read a bit of one, then move on to another. Like that, I find it keeps my interest up, and I'm more likely to finish most of them.
Speaker 6.
The last book I read was brilliant. The story was so inspiring that I really didn't want it to end. I have to confess that I had a quick look at the final few lines when I was still only reading the second chapter. I just couldn't resist. I've done that a few times before, but it doesn't spoil the story for me. Someone said that if I used an e-reader instead of a paperback book, I couldn't do this so easily. I might get one. They're so small and light.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
I've always been a keen reader. I read all kinds of books. I think it's better not to get into the habit of reading the same sort of thing all the time. That does mean that sometimes I end up with a book which I'm not all that keen on, and I have to force myself to get to the last page. I won't give up, though, no matter how dreadful the story is. You never know what's going to happen at the end.
Speaker 2.
I've got so many books at home. Whenever a friend comes round, they end up looking at my bookshelves and asking me what I think they'd enjoy. It's nice to be able to lend them a book, as long as they remember to return it. Even though I'm very attached to my own little library, I've started reading on screen recently, and I'm quite surprised that I find it easier and more convenient than having to hold a book open and keep turning pages over. I didn't expect that.
Speaker 3.
I have such a busy lifestyle that I never usually have much time for reading. But if I can, I try to get through a few pages last thing each day, just before I switch the lights off. It's a great way to relax. But I've just been on holiday, and all I did was sit in the sunshine and read. It was wonderful. I was so excited that I was able to spend time reading the little pile of books that had been sitting on my shelf for such a long time.
Speaker 4.
My friends and I have started a kind of book club. We all read the same book, then meet up and talk about it. We actually have quite a good laugh. We take it in turns to decide what to read next, but it has to be something that none of us have read before. Some books have certainly been better than others. When it's my turn to decide, I always look on the internet to see what other people have got to say before I make up my mind.
Speaker 5.
I never enjoyed studying literature at school. It seemed to take the pleasure out of reading for me. So for years, I used to pick up a book, read a few chapters, then start losing enthusiasm for it before getting to the end. Now, what I find works for me is to have a few books lying around. I'll read a bit of one, then move on to another. Like that, I find it keeps my interest up, and I'm more likely to finish most of them.
Speaker 6.
The last book I read was brilliant. The story was so inspiring that I really didn't want it to end. I have to confess that I had a quick look at the final few lines when I was still only reading the second chapter. I just couldn't resist. I've done that a few times before, but it doesn't spoil the story for me. Someone said that if I used an e-reader instead of a paperback book, I couldn't do this so easily. I might get one. They're so small and light.
That is the end of question 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. You will hear an interview with an astronaut called Fred Lucatoni, who recently spent 6 months living on the International Space Station. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Welcome to today's programme, the third in our series on living in space. I'm delighted to have with me in the studio Fred Lucatoni, who spent 6 months living on the International Space Station recently. Fred, can you tell us what it was like?
Sure. Well, the International Space Station is an amazing place. It's actually pretty large. There's more living space than you'd find in a six-bedroom house. It's as long as a football pitch, and it has a volume equal to that of a Boeing 747 aeroplane. Does that give you an idea?
It does. And now that you're back on Earth, what do you miss about the space station?
Well, of course, looking down on Earth from up there is incredible. It's so beautiful. And it's great fun the way you move around, floating in midair. I'd never get bored of that. But you won't believe me when I say that I've never slept better than I did up there. I wish it was the same on Earth.
Interesting. Was there anything that was hard to put up with?
Actually, the training beforehand is so thorough that nothing is really surprising. I knew we'd all be living in a small area, very close to each other all the time, and of course that everybody knows everything about you while you're there. That wasn't a problem. I suppose I occasionally got a bit tired of having to spend 2 hours working out every day, but that's just something you've got to do.
To stop your muscles and bones from getting too weak?
That's right. And you have to be careful about what you eat too, to make sure you're getting all the necessary vitamins and so on. We all choose our own food before going up to the space station, so each of us has a personal supply. There's a surprisingly wide range of stuff that you can have up there. And it doesn't take all that long to get a meal ready, which is good.
It's quite busy on the space station, isn't it?
Yes. One of the things we did quite a lot of is run experiments. I'll never forget one I had to do with live ants. Watching them trying to move around was pretty entertaining because, like us, they can't control their movements in space. I wasn't sure exactly what the experiment was for. Sometimes they are quite weird, to be honest. But you just do as instructed and hope it's useful to whoever requested it.
Did you ever feel lonely when you were up there?
Lonely? Not at all. There were three of us, plus, of course, the huge team down on the ground.
Doesn't it feel like they're monitoring you all the time?
Well, they are, but you soon forget about that. In fact, it's comforting to know that you can turn to them at any time. They keep an eye on every aspect of the expedition and get feedback from us all the time. We have to send them all sorts of information on a daily basis, fill in forms on the computer and so on.
Did 6 months feel like a long time to be away from home?
Not too long, no. But you start dreaming about being able to do certain things back on Earth, like taking your car for a drive. That was something my colleague was desperate to do. I certainly couldn't wait to have a proper shower. There's no running water up there. And I suppose I thought about being able to breathe in lovely fresh air to a certain extent too.
Oh, yes, I'd miss that. Anyway, one last question. What do you think makes a good astronaut?
Oh, well, someone who isn't likely to panic. But then you're trained to cope with all sorts. I'd say more than anything, you've got to work well in a team. After all, once you're up there, you can't avoid each other very easily. But it's also important to be able to communicate well. And of course, to follow commands from others too.
Fred, it's been really interesting talking to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Welcome to today's programme, the third in our series on living in space. I'm delighted to have with me in the studio Fred Lucatoni, who spent 6 months living on the International Space Station recently. Fred, can you tell us what it was like?
Sure. Well, the International Space Station is an amazing place. It's actually pretty large. There's more living space than you'd find in a six-bedroom house. It's as long as a football pitch, and it has a volume equal to that of a Boeing 747 aeroplane. Does that give you an idea?
It does. And now that you're back on Earth, what do you miss about the space station?
Well, of course, looking down on Earth from up there is incredible. It's so beautiful. And it's great fun the way you move around, floating in midair. I'd never get bored of that. But you won't believe me when I say that I've never slept better than I did up there. I wish it was the same on Earth.
Interesting. Was there anything that was hard to put up with?
Actually, the training beforehand is so thorough that nothing is really surprising. I knew we'd all be living in a small area, very close to each other all the time, and of course that everybody knows everything about you while you're there. That wasn't a problem. I suppose I occasionally got a bit tired of having to spend 2 hours working out every day, but that's just something you've got to do.
To stop your muscles and bones from getting too weak?
That's right. And you have to be careful about what you eat, too, to make sure you're getting all the necessary vitamins and so on. We all choose our own food before going up to the space station, so each of us has a personal supply. There's a surprisingly wide range of stuff that you can have up there. And it doesn't take all that long to get a meal ready, which is good.
It's quite busy on the space station, isn't it?
Yes. One of the things we did quite a lot of is run experiments. I'll never forget one I had to do with live ants. Watching them trying to move around was pretty entertaining because, like us, they can't control their movements in space. I wasn't sure exactly what the experiment was for. Sometimes they are quite weird, to be honest. But you just do as instructed and hope it's useful to whoever requested it.
Did you ever feel lonely when you were up there?
Lonely? Not at all. There were three of us, plus, of course, the huge team down on the ground.
Doesn't it feel like they're monitoring you all the time?
Well, they are, but you soon forget about that. In fact, it's comforting to know that you can turn to them at any time. They keep an eye on every aspect of the expedition and get feedback from us all the time. We have to send them all sorts of information on a daily basis, fill in forms on the computer and so on.
Did 6 months feel like a long time to be away from home?
Not too long, no. But you start dreaming about being able to do certain things back on Earth, like taking your car for a drive. That was something my colleague was desperate to do. I certainly couldn't wait to have a proper shower. There's no running water up there. And I suppose I thought about being able to breathe in lovely fresh air to a certain extent too.
Oh, yes, I'd miss that. Anyway, one last question. What do you think makes a good astronaut?
Oh, well, someone who isn't likely to panic. But then you're trained to cope with all sorts. I'd say more than anything, you've got to work well in a team. After all, once you're up there, you can't avoid each other very easily. But it's also important to be able to communicate well. And of course, to follow commands from others too.
Fred, it's been really interesting talking to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That is the end of question 7. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Part A. You will hear a man giving a talk about the history of the US dollar. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences in Part A. Write one or two words in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Thanks for coming along to today's talk. I'm glad to see that lots of the economics students have turned up, but I'd like to welcome everyone. And I hope you all find this talk useful and interesting. As you know, I'm going to give you a brief history of the dollar, the currency of the United States of America. We'll begin in the year 1620, when a group of people decided to travel from Britain to America, which they called the New World, in search of a new life. They took gold and English coins with them, but they spent it all quickly. In order to buy food, animal skins, and other necessities from the people already living there, they needed to find another form of money, and they soon discovered that certain shells could be traded. In 1637, these were actually declared to be a legal form of currency. Later, other objects, such as tobacco and corn, were also used as currency, but neither became legal tender. Some people also attempted to buy and sell with nails, which had a similar value to money. This was not successful, however, as many wooden buildings were set on fire by people trying to get hold of a supply. The British authorities refused to allow gold and silver coins to be exported to America, so eventually, after America declared independence in the late 18th century, the new American government needed to establish their own currency. They issued a form of paper money called Continentals, although these soon became worthless. It was another 70 years at least before an actual dollar bill, or greenback as we know it today, came into being. These were black on the front and green on the other side, so coloured because of the chemicals used, to prevent people from making copies of them easily. This colour was thought to represent stability, and it was for this reason that it was selected. In contrast to the currency notes of many other countries, the size of all paper bills was standardised, so the only way to distinguish one bill from another is to look at the words, numbers, and images used on the front and back. Also, the same colours are used on all dollar bills, no matter what they are worth. However, some older bills, known as silver certificates, had blue or red highlights on the front. What I'm going to do next is to show you some slides of various dollar bills. But before I do that, I'll stop for a moment to see if anyone has any questions.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Thanks for coming along to today's talk. I'm glad to see that lots of the economics students have turned up, but I'd like to welcome everyone, and I hope you all find this talk useful and interesting. As you know, I'm going to give you a brief history of the dollar, the currency of the United States of America. We'll begin in the year 1620, when a group of people decided to travel from Britain to America, which they called the New World, in search of a new life. They took gold and English coins with them, but they spent it all quickly. In order to buy food, animal skins and other necessities from the people already living there, they needed to find another form of money, and they soon discovered that certain shells could be traded. In 1637, these were actually declared to be a legal form of currency. Later, other objects, such as tobacco and corn, were also used as currency, but neither became legal tender. Some people also attempted to buy and sell with nails, which had a similar value to money. This was not successful, however, as many wooden buildings were set on fire by people trying to get hold of a supply. The British authorities refused to allow gold and silver coins to be exported to America, so eventually, after America declared independence in the late 18th century, the new American government needed to establish their own currency. They issued a form of paper money called Continentals, although these soon became worthless. It was another 70 years at least before an actual dollar bill, or greenback as we know it today, came into being. These were black on the front and green on the other side, so coloured because of the chemicals used, to prevent people from making copies of them easily. This colour was thought to represent stability, and it was for this reason that it was selected. In contrast to the currency notes of many other countries, the size of all paper bills was standardised, so the only way to distinguish one bill from another is to look at the words, numbers and images used on the front and back. Also, the same colours are used on all dollar bills, no matter what they are worth. However, some older bills, known as silver certificates, had blue or red highlights on the front. What I'm going to do next is to show you some slides of various dollar bills. But before I do that, I'll stop for a moment to see if anyone has any questions.
Question 8, Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about the history of the US dollar and complete the sentences in Part B. Write up to three words in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
What did you think of the talk yesterday about the history of US currency?
Really interesting. And I enjoyed the part where the speaker showed us all the images of the different notes, old and new ones. Did you check out the websites that he told us about?
I looked at one of them and found out loads. For example, the oldest designs are on the back of the $1 bill and on the front of the $2 bill.
And the $2 bill is unusual for a couple of reasons. Most of the other bills have a picture of a building on them, like the US Treasury, for example. But this bill has a reproduction of a painting on it. And the other reason is just that it's hardly ever used. Other bills are much more common.
I read that too. Apparently, in some places in the US, particularly where there are big conferences or lots of tourists, companies organise campaigns to encourage people to spend $2 bills. They even have competitions to find hidden ones.
Oh, were those the events that they call Spend Tom?
That's right. Tom is short for Thomas Jefferson, one of the US presidents, because his picture is printed on the $2 bill.
Oh, I see. That's interesting. That makes much more sense now.
And did you find out anything about the dollar sign, like why it looks the way it does?
Oh, I tried to find out about that. Some people say it's developed from the symbol for the British pound, and others say that it comes from putting the letters U and S, from United States, on top of each other. but nobody seems to agree on this.
I'm going to look into that some more, I think.
I found out quite a bit about coins, too. They're manufactured in a place called a mint. What they do is they get a huge piece of metal and cut discs from it. Each one of these is called a blank because it has nothing on it at this stage. Then they strike the coin, which means that they transfer an image onto it.
And most coins have the head of one of the US presidents on them, don't they?
That's right. And different things on the back. My favourite has got an olive branch on it. That's on a 10-cent coin. Then others have more obvious things, like the Statue of Liberty on the $1 coin.
I read that the $1 coin isn't very popular. People prefer using the dollar bill instead. And that the government wants to get rid of the $1 bill to save production costs. But very few people are in favour.
It's part of their culture, I suppose. Anyway, it was useful talking about all this. I need to write a report on it. I'd better get on with it.
OK. Good luck with that.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
What did you think of the talk yesterday about the history of US currency?
Really interesting. And I enjoyed the part where the speaker showed us all the images of the different notes, old and new ones. Did you check out the websites that he told us about?
I looked at one of them and found out loads. For example, the oldest designs are on the back of the $1 bill and on the front of the $2 bill.
And the $2 bill is unusual for a couple of reasons. Most of the other bills have a picture of a building on them, like the US Treasury, for example. But this bill has a reproduction of a painting on it. And the other reason is just that it's hardly ever used. Other bills are much more common.
I read that too. Apparently, in some places in the US, particularly where there are big conferences or lots of tourists, companies organise campaigns to encourage people to spend $2 bills. They even have competitions to find hidden ones.
Oh, were those the events that they call Spend Tom?
That's right. Tom is short for Thomas Jefferson, one of the US presidents, because his picture is printed on the $2 bill.
Oh, I see. That's interesting. That makes much more sense now.
And did you find out anything about the dollar sign, like why it looks the way it does?
Oh, I tried to find out about that. Some people say it's developed from the symbol for the British pound, and others say that it comes from putting the letters U and S, from United States, on top of each other. But nobody seems to agree on this.
I'm going to look into that some more, I think.
I found out quite a bit about coins, too. They're manufactured in a place called a mint. What they do is they get a huge piece of metal and cut discs from it. Each one of these is called a blank because it has nothing on it at this stage. Then they strike the coin, which means that they transfer an image onto it.
And most coins have the head of one of the US presidents on them, don't they?
That's right. And different things on the back. My favourite has got an olive branch on it. That's on a 10-cent coin. Then others have more obvious things, like the Statue of Liberty on the $1 coin.
I read that the $1 coin isn't very popular. People prefer using the dollar bill instead. And that the government wants to get rid of the $1 bill to save production costs. But very few people are in favour.
It's part of their culture, I suppose. Anyway, it was useful talking about all this. I need to write a report on it. I'd better get on with it.
OK. Good luck with that.
That is the end of question 8 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.